Welcome to the IP 360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at how we manage our wealth. Today is another Beyond the Ice special edition of the podcast, where we talk about wealth for the professional athlete. I'm joined today by Kent Manderville, a private wealth advisor who leads the Hockey Family Office division of IP Private Wealth. Kent is a retired NHL player with over 700 games in his career and is now a certified financial planner, which gives him a unique and firsthand understanding of hockey professionals and their finances. Today, Kent and I talk about life after ice, transitioning from player to whatever is next. Let's go to the interview. So today we're talking about transitions, interesting transitions for hockey professionals. So I'm here with Kent Manderville. He is the private wealth advisor leading the Hockey Family Office, which is a division of IP Private Wealth. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means, IP Private Wealth? What do you do there?
Well, succinctly, it's basically integrated comprehensive wealth management. So not only focusing on the portfolio management, but understanding there are risks, benefits, strengths, weaknesses of managing wealth, how to protect it, how to preserve it, prudent growth, and making a financial plan specific to every individual circumstances. No two people are alike, and neither should their financial plan be. So we really have a bespoke, comprehensive approach to our wealth management.
And yourself, you're a retired NHL player and a private wealth advisor, and you manage the Hockey Family Office. So your division specializes in the financial experiences of hockey professionals overall.
Correct. And really it's colored by my experience, as you said, as an NHL player, and transitioning and understanding the whole picture of the reality of what it takes to get to the NHL, how to stay in the NHL, and transitioning from the NHL and those years beyond that, and what that looks like for someone's life and for their whole family, really. So we've taken the IP private wealth concept and customized it for the hockey professional.
And that seems like a very natural transition into our topic of transitions. So we've talked before about this, that you start hockey at a very young age, and it's not a 60-year career. And we've talked about the some of the challenges and some of the upsides of transitioning when you're ready to go beyond the ice.
Correct. And it's different for everybody, and no two individuals are alike. Like being on a team, similar circumstances as far as being hockey professionals, but because different guys have different interests, they want to pursue their passions, they have different financial realities. And so their transition and trajectory from then on, they could be very different.
So when in a hockey player's career, when is he likely to start thinking about what his transition plan is? To really start thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, for me personally, I chose to go, when you're younger, and it depends if you're European, North American, whatnot. But generally speaking, in North America, is do you play major junior hockey or do you go the university route? And when I say university, it's the NCAA, because they provide hockey scholarships. So for me, just with the idea of life after hockey, pursuing the educational side was an easy decision for me. And even above that is going to an Ivy League school. I went to Cornell University. But even having said that, I was a finance major at Cornell. Great school, wonderful. They don't teach you financial planning. They don't teach you wealth management. So when I played, I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of just my own research, asked a lot of questions. And for me, it was a continuous process to refine, to distill what I wanted to do after. But it was a painful process too, because we don't have that structure, that paradigm to say, okay, this is what you need to do. These are the steps you need to do. And again, like I said, it's different for everybody. But for me, it took some time really to kind of turn my mind to it. So I would say kind of mid-career guy, start thinking about it. Before then, you're just trying to get to the NHL. You're trying to stay in the NHL.
Right, right. So when you spent so many years focused on a hockey career, how do you know what might be the thing that you're interested in doing after?
Yeah, that's a good question, because sometimes your interests aren't exactly something that you can base a career on. So it's one thing to be interested in wines or golf. It's another thing to say, you know what, I'm going to make a go out of this as a career. So I think during the off season, during downtime, it is good to reach out to people to, like I said, ask those questions and really see, turn your mind to it. What would it be like if I did X? And obviously having a support network, whether it's family, friends, whatnot, I think that's key and critical as well.
Is there sort of a common transition that happens, or is it really varied? What kind of post-hockey careers or entrepreneurships have you seen?
Well, I think the similarity for everybody is really that that sense of purposelessness, not having a purpose, and really looking and saying, okay, how do I get structure back into my life? And for a lot of guys, it revolves around their kids and their kids' schedules. And so that schedule becomes your schedule. But it is varied in the sense, because maybe a spouse doesn't work, or maybe she doesn't have a career, or maybe it's different for everybody. But so there's commonalities in the sense of defining your purpose. Everybody needs to do that. But the differences are, what's your support network? Did you go to school? Do you have a university degree? Do you not? What are your interests? How realistic are your expectations? Do you just want to stay in hockey? Do you want to go into broadcasting? And some of the things I've seen where it's been varied. Some guys stay in the game. They do player development. They get into coaching. They've been very successful at that. Others completely turn away from hockey and reinvented themselves completely. And so I think it really depends on the individual, what they need, what they want. And it depends on their family circumstances as well. So it needs to be customized to the individual. And I think, and just a continuous dialogue, quite frankly.
Is there anything in place, within the league that, that helps with transition, or is it kind of wild, wild west? You got to figure it out kind of on your own.
Yeah. I think in the past it's been a little bit of the wild, wild west. I think the NHL alumni is doing a better job. The NHLPA is doing a better job on doing that. But again, that's part of what we do too, is having those conversations and really providing that service, again, informed by my own experience. And not that my experience is the only reality, but really being able to tap the resources available to the players, making them aware of what's out there. And just, I had a client meeting the other day with a former NHL player, and between him and his spouse, just saying, you know what, it's been really helpful having that emotional support from you, Kent, because you provide that perspective. You understand our reality, and you know what, she said, I know we're preaching to the choir, but this is the way we feel. You know it. We're just kind of verbalizing it. And it's true. When you've been there, not that my path is going to be the same as their path, but having an understanding advisor and just saying, I know where you are. Let's get through this. You will get through this, I think is really beneficial.
So when you're on a team, there's a range of different players at different stages in their career. Do players often turn to some of the more senior guys on the team and look for advice? And is that a double-edged sword?
That's a good point. I think naturally there's a lot of downtime, right? When you're on the bus, you're on the plane, you go out to eat, you're at the restaurant. So I do think the older guys become mentors in a lot of ways to the younger players. And so I think that's beneficial. I would say, generally speaking, at the NHL level, the older guys are, they've got it together. And as far as providing good advice, I don't think I can think of any example where an older player was leading a younger player astray. And just by the fact of it's almost like survival of the fittest. If you're an older player in the NHL, you've clearly done something correctly. And so I think it's actually a good thing. Having said that, some of the older players, they haven't done their due diligence. They haven't asked those hard questions of their advisors, and they may not have clarity on their own situation. So sometimes when an older player says, oh yeah, you know, trust this person, sometimes it's not always the best case, because the older player may have not done their due diligence. And a lot of things is they only realize after the fact, after they're retired, hey, I'm not in such a good financial shape as I thought I was, or I thought my reality was way different. And so that's when we find that they're providing advice to the younger players that maybe isn't the best advice.
Right. I hear a lot about players leaving and starting things like opening a franchise or other often, you know, entertainment related opportunities. I think that, you know, that kind of makes sense. You've got a name and people are attracted to it. Is that as common as it seems? And is that something that, you know, that your team talks people through how to decide the right and maybe the wrong opportunities that come up?
Yeah, I think what we see is more players getting pitched on ideas, business ideas. And so going through with the player about the various pitches, letting them understand, like, these are the questions we would ask. And a lot of it is really not good. Really, the only true beneficiary of the business arrangement is the person proposing it. It's not the player. And quite frankly, usually the player is so busy that they provide the money. There's no oversight. There's no reporting. There's no benchmarking. There's nothing. And it becomes a bit of a fiasco. And when the player is playing, maybe they can afford it. They don't think much about it. But after they're done playing, 50,000, 100 grand, 200, 500, 700, after tax, they look and they're like, yeah, that's a lot of work to do that. So it's easy to paper it over when they're playing and they can absorb it. But in hindsight, they look, oh, that was a real tough one to take. Sometimes the best actions are those not taken. And that's where we can provide that advice and experience, quite frankly, and perspective that saves the players from those mistakes.
It must be difficult during a hockey career, which is so busy, right? Just like it's so intense. It's physically and mentally all consuming, and many times of the year, at least, to have the mind share to think about things like transition and how to prepare on some of those levels of, like, you know, you might know what you want to do afterwards. We talked about one of your teammates who had a business, a siding business that he was doing. So he probably had a pretty good idea. He was going back to that. But, you know, if you're super wrapped up with your career, to have mind share to think about not just what you're going to do, but what that financially will look like and how to make sure that you have enough dollars to carry you into your future. How does a player kind of balance out the need to focus on what's happening right now in his career and what's going to happen later?
Well, quite frankly, that's our job. And that's what we do. And we do it very well because we give that perspective. You know, it's almost like the t-shirt, been there, done that. But really, turning their mind to that is something that we do. And we provide, you know, counsel and guidance. And hey, have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? So really, it's more on us to have those discussions with the player. And like I said in the past, every player's reality is different. And that's up to us to be able to customize and tailor it to that specific player's interests. Doesn't make sense for me to say, hey, go do your MBA at Harvard if they didn't go to university. Now, that's not to say some of the smartest guys I know played major junior and they didn't go to university. So, you know, you can't pigeonhole people. You can't just say, you know, this guy's a write-off. You know, he's a lost cause. Everybody has different interests. Everybody has different strengths. and the challenges to understand those strengths, help them on the financial side, have that trusted advisor relationship, and then help them get to the other side on the transition part as well.
And it seems that the concept of transition can be almost like a word we shall not speak, that it's, it can be very frightening for a hockey professional to think about. But can you give us any examples or assurance that there's players and hockey professionals that have transitioned and maybe found something even that they enjoyed as much or even more after hockey?
Yeah, I mean, well, like I said, guys have varied interests, so it really varies as far as the outcomes. But generally speaking, I would say the successful formula has a player forward thinking, a player envisioning what that reality is after hockey, an understanding that mentally they need to be okay with, okay, you know what? My time's done. I loved playing hockey. Hockey was a wonderful chapter in my life. That chapter is ending. Now it's time to embrace something else. I was talking with one guy not long ago, and he said, if I knew how much fun the business world was, I would have retired earlier. And he played in the KHL. He played in Europe for a few years. But it's embracing that reality and saying it's going to happen. Let's embrace it. It's scary, but that would be one thing. The mental ability to embrace the opportunity. The second thing I would say is support from family, support from friends, support to say, you know what, there might be some turbulence. Okay. Up front, we're going to get through this. That's okay. Third thing would be financial ability. You know, we all have our dreams. We all can't sink $1 million or $2 million into a business. Is that the best thing? If it goes under, what happens to your financial security? So that's what we provide as well, is that reality check for them on the financial side. But those three, you want to call them pillars, almost like a stool standing up. I think having those in play and the interaction between all three of them is really important for that transition to happen successfully.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense, actually. So do you ever see players that they're retired? It's been 1 year, 10 years, whatever the case may be. And they realize post-transition, oh no, this wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And at that point, what can a player do or a former player do?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. It's funny because when you're in your early 20s and you're coming out of university, it's very easy to change course. When you're in your 30s and for some cases, like your example, you could be in your 40s and you change a different direction, you know, change the direction. It brings up a lot of other questions. And so just because it is so customized, it really depends on the circumstances, but what's their financial reality? Can they afford to change direction? Are both spouses working? What are their expenses? How old are their kids? What is their, what is their financial position as far as their capacity to take on more risk by changing that direction? So I think it's a real discussion point, and that's why it's never set it and forget it, because people change their minds. That's the reality of it. But it's a bit like turning around a cruise ship or a tanker, super tanker, versus turning around a canoe. When we're younger, we can make changes. We can adapt very easily. When you have family, you have a support network, it's harder when you have these financial obligations. So mm-hmm. when you're in your 30s and 40s, changing is not so easy. So it's about having that communication and understanding where you are financially, for sure.
Right. Can you share with us some examples of interesting post-rink transitions that you've seen? Things that maybe some interesting career paths that people took or businesses that people opened that kind of surprised you?
Well, I think it's been really varied. I think guys staying in the industry, whether they're coaching, whether get into management as a general manager, providing even at the grassroots level, more in player development or skills coach, that I see that. And there's a lot of examples of that. One coach that I had, it's funny, when I started playing professionally, I was in the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, and they sent a bunch of us down to the minors during the playoffs. The Leafs didn't make the playoffs, so we got sent down to the American Hockey League in St. John's. My coach down there was Mark Crawford, who was just coming off, you know, new coach, younger guy, who was super passionate. He went on to win a Stanley Cup with Colorado as a coach there. And then the other player assistant coach, and he would play some games, and then he was an assistant coach as well, is Joel Quenneville, who won multiple cups and who is the third most winningest coach in NHL history. And so you look at those guys, they made the transition, and this is before my time too, very successful of staying in the hockey industry. Then you have some guys who get into broadcasting. A former teammate of mine, Brian Boucher, does a great job with NBC. You get Jeff O'Neill, who is a teammate of mine in Carolina and Hartford. He's done well with TSN. He's funny as ever. You see Gary Roberts, who took his passion for fitness when he played and had great career longevity and retired twice. That's a whole other story in and of itself, but now trains some of the top players in the NHL, Steven Stamkos and others. So he's created a business that way. And then there's others like, you know, for example, Ken Baumgartner got a CFA, works with an institutional money manager down in the US. There's other guys who have done completely outside of hockey. And so it really is varied. And again, it goes back to what is the person's individual tastes, what is their realities, whether it's family, support networks, finances. And it really is a lot of different options for them. The players just need to understand there are options and be able to make those informed decisions.
In terms of people who are hockey professionals but aren't players, is there a difference in what their transition looks like when they move on out of hockey?
So for hockey professionals, that's what we basically say, that when guys stay in the game or have that supportive, they still, you know, whether it's player development, coach, general manager, but that's really of staying in the industry. But it's, the reality is that when you're starting again from scratch, your income is not going to be very high. You're going to go from making, I mean, the league minimum is close to $1 million in the NHL now. It's around $750,000. And so you transition, that's the minimum. You're not getting $750,000 when you're going to be a player development guy. So you have the reality of kind of starting off from scratch, whether it's an assistant coach in the American Hockey League. You have to readjust your income level and your expectations, and you have to pay your dues too. So that takes time. What's your reality? What's your spending like? What's your tax rate like? How do you protect your assets while you're making the transition? So there's all these other aspects that are extremely important. But I think the biggest thing for those hockey professionals, once they transition from being the player and staying in the industry, you're at the low part of the totem pole again. Maybe you're fortunate and you can get a little bit higher just because of the status of your career. You're a former Hall of Famer. You're not going to be scouting. Look at Joe Sakic. He's done a great job as general manager in Colorado. But usually the norm is you're starting off at the bottom of the totem pole. You got to put your time in. You got to put the work in order to excel at this new career. You can't just go on the coattails of your playing career. You need to reestablish yourself again.
Mm-hmm. So as a player begins to think about, really think about transition, what it's going to look like, what he's going to do, what he can afford to do, you know, meeting all those realities and also the obligations his life now offers to him, right? Family, kids, elderly parents, who knows? Who kind of should be around his round table? That he talks to, that he trusts for their input and also respects their input?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, family is super important, and whether it's your partner, spouse, whatever, but that really is the critical piece, just to have buy-in of what your future beyond hockey looks like. And so that's the first discussion. And quite frankly, that's got to be a discussion that happens on a regular basis anyways. I've seen in the past where people just, you know, you live in the moment and I get it, but there's really not much preparation on what does our reality look after we're done? Where are we going to live? Are we going to live, you know, here in our summer place? Maybe the place in the summer is great as a refuge. So no matter where you are during the season, you always come back to your summer cottage. But your summer cottage isn't a place to have your kids growing up. Like, where are they going to go to school? So it's having those difficult conversations or just threshing out the details with your family members, with your spouse, that sort of thing. But I think that that's one thing that we really bring to the table is we really meld the financial wealth management side with what's important to you and how do we make that a reality. It's so critical to have your after hockey life grounded in reality. And so I've had so many times when a former player says, oh wow, we're looking at our expenses and we didn't think we would be here, but that's where they are. How do we make it work? Is it reasonable? Is it unreasonable? And so it's just a constant process that we bring to the table. It's a perspective that we bring to the table, but no question, first and foremost, it's family. And then we're right there with them as far as their support network.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Kent. It's always such a pleasure interviewing with you. Where can people learn more about what you do?
I think if they go to the website, it's hockeyfamilyoffice.com. They can see our story. They can see our process a little bit more. And there's a contact us note, a link, and we can reach out. You can have a 20-minute, 30-minute conversation, quick conversation, and just to have that introductory call where you just thresh out some ideas and, with really no obligation. It's more that I've been where they are. I know what it's like on the other side of the road, of the hill, and just to have those conversations. And it's really cool to connect with other people in the hockey community. And it's a great spot to find us. So that's the best place.
Perfect. Kent, thank you so much. Looking forward to our next podcast together.
Me too. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast, Beyond the Ice edition. If you'd like to reach out to Kent and his team in the Hockey Family Office, head to hockeyfamilyoffice.com. You can also head to ipprivatewealth.com for more information on the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. See you next time. And now for the fine print. The opinions and statements expressed by our team are effective as of the date of this broadcast and may be subject to change.